comics,
movies,
music,
video games,
technology,
Blu-ray,
television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is not here. But this is one of our special bonus commentary episodes, and Abe, you know, he comes in and out. But, you know, I think he's just too afraid of the dark, because this week we are talking about Pitch Black. We are going to do a commentary, a whole audio commentary for the film Pitch Black, the unrated Blu-ray version. Out Now is normally a film podcast, with Abe and Abe, which has Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. However, we like to do these bonus episodes every now and again. We haven't done a commentary in some time, so, you know, why not? We have Riddick approaching soon in the theaters. We figured why not do one for Pitch Black, arguably one of Vin Diesel's best movies, I would say. And we'll later confirm those thoughts, because joining me, I have from the Naptown Nerd and WhySoBlue.com, the man with drug-filled tear ducts, Brandon Peters.
You aren't afraid of podcasting, are you?
And from the Long Box of Doom, Walking Dead TV podcast, and the Nothing's On podcast, he's on the run from Cool Hauser. It's Jim Dietz.
I like to podcast in the dark.
All right, guys. How are we doing?
Terrific.
Great.
I'm excited.
I'm excited to finally see a Vin Diesel movie that isn't Iron Giant. So, let's do it.
All right. As people know with these commentaries, we all try to sync them up together. So currently, Jim, Brandon, and I are all about 10 seconds into the film. Like, the Universal logo is just kind of popping on the screen, and we have it all paused right there. So I'm going to count down from three, and we're going to get this going. But, you know, everyone else is just, you know, listening to this commentary without watching the movie. You know, good luck with that. I mean, people tend to like these, regardless of if they're watching the movie or not. But, you know, it does work. We do sync it up, so we're going to do what we can here. So here we go. I'm going to count down from three, and on the sound of go, we'll just all press play. Good?
Good.
Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1, go. Okay.
So, Aaron.
Yes.
This is the film from writer-director of The Arrival, David Tui.
The Arrival, which I believe...
The Arrival.
When did we mention this before? I feel like
we have mentioned it like three or four times.
The Arrival of Charlie Sheen, one of the best sci-fi movies of the 90s, I would say. I really like that. It's a really smartly made movie. And it does star Charlie Sheen. It does two of those things.
He's also the mastermind behind Waterworld. I mean, don't sell the man short.
Oh, yeah, David Tui has an interesting...
Critters 2?
Anyone Critters 2?
Yeah.
There's a Perfect Getaway.
He worked with Sheen. He wrote another Sheen film, Terminal Velocity.
Ooh, classic. He wrote G.I. Jane.
And a movie that was shown on HBO way, way too many times, Warlock, with Julian Sands and Laurie Singer, Richard E. Grant. I remember that very well from what I had.
He kicked the extended basic
cable package.
He wrote and directed Below. A movie I've never seen, but I've always heard good things about, and I've always wanted to see.
Yeah.
It's like a submarine movie.
He had Imposter, too, which... Whew.
That's a Philip K. Dick adaptation, correct? With Gary Sinise?
They say it is.
And Vince D'Onofrio's in that, too.
D'Onofrio, and I think it's like... I think it's no movie if there's no Mekhi Phifer in there, so Mekhi Phifer's in that movie.
Makes a better short than a movie, that full feature length film.
I feel like the twist is that he actually is an imposter. Let's get to this movie that we're watching, Pitch Black. Let's get to some initial thoughts, I guess, because I like Pitch Black quite a bit. I think it has some good world building. I like the Riddick character. I think everyone likes the Riddick character. I'd be hard pressed to find someone that's like, oh, I like everything about the movie except Riddick. But it certainly borrows heavily from other sci-fi films. But I think it has some interesting ideas, and I like the general kind of concept involving the darkness and what have you. But Brandon, thoughts?
It's a little weird for me. I had one of my worst ever theater going experiences with this movie.
Okay.
We had where I grew up. We had a Dollar Theater, which, if you remember back in the day, the Dollar Theaters were like the worn down theaters that just weren't bringing in, you know, new people anymore. They weren't keeping them up to date, and they only had like two or three screens in them. Well, someone had the bright idea to take this $1 theater in my city I grew up in, Fort Wayne, Indiana, and turn it back into a first-run theater, except for they didn't, like, remodel anything. It kept it same as is. And the first weekend it opened as the first-run theater, it had Pitch Black and happened to be the only theater showing Pitch Black. So I went to go see it, and the picture looked like it'd been passed around through grindhouse theaters in the 70s almost. And then the sound was so low. Like, if someone sneezed, you missed, like, lines and lines of dialogue. It was really low. We talked to the theater manager and stuff. They're like, oh, well, we'll get on it. And it never, the volume never went. Imagine this opening scene, like you're listening to a YouTube video on your phone with no speakers in your ears. And it got to a point where my friend I was with yelled out, I was watching Predator in my bedroom louder than this. Some people clapped, but they didn't do anything about it. But so it was really hard to, like, immerse myself into this movie, which is it's a really solid little sci-fi horror thriller. I did take some things from it that I liked a lot. I loved the character of Riddick was awesome. And I really, with this movie, and not thinking of, like, a franchise after it, I don't know that there's a character who you follow around with in a film the whole time and he survives that you still don't trust him at the end of the film. And you still don't get his agenda, which
That's an interesting point that we can talk about later as the film carries on.
As the film carries on. But and some other things I'll point out later, but I did think the film was okay and I never really revisited it till now. Now, not this commentary, but not too long ago.
I didn't get to see Pitch Black on a big screen in theaters, but I did buy it on HD DVD when I got an HD DVD drive for my Xbox 360 back when such things existed. So I've seen it a few times since then, just to, you know, as the novelty of the HD DVD. You know, it's like, hey, I actually have three of these, you know, and Pitch Black is one of them. But I always thought it was a good little movie. I love movies that are, especially in science fiction and fantasy, it seems like a lot of the entries in the genres can just be way too overblown with a fake sense of epicness. Riddick. I thought this was like very, you know, the scale of this movie is very cool. I always thought the grouping of characters is kind of weird. It was almost like they have like a bag full of, you know, different character archetypes, you know, mixed up. And they're like, okay, who do you want to survive the crash? And they reached into the bag, you know.
Movies are more ragtag than the team that we have presented here.
Motley, even, I would say. But, you know, I thought, like you said, it's a good little, a smaller movie, and I really appreciate that about it. The scale of it made it really work for me, you know, that they kept it on a more human level and not tried to go for this epic, giant, you know, chosen one scope that, you know, that the sequel did. And, I mean, it says a lot about the Riddick character that in the original version of this, he dies, and they rewrote it so he could live, so the character could go on to, you know, create an IP franchise. So it says something about the appeal of the character and of Vin Diesel. I mean, this was my first real look at Vin Diesel. I don't remember seeing him anything before this.
Yep. Same here.
I mean, yeah, aside, because you don't really think about him in Saving Private Ryan until after the fact. But it certainly is the... I mean, this movie, and I can talk about this right now, actually. This movie opened... You know when this movie opened?
February 2000.
On the same weekend as Boiler Room, which also starred Vin Diesel. And he was certainly coming up in the world. And that movie and this movie. I mean, this movie, he's clearly
I think he's first billed.
He must be,
but,
yeah, then Rod.
I mean, at the time, Cole Hauser is probably the biggest name in this movie. I mean, the person some people have seen the most, because Rhoda Mitchell did a lot of European films.
Yeah,
and this was like her first...
Keith David, perhaps.
Keith David's a pretty well-known character actor. Rhoda Mitchell, to me, always seems like she's better than the... You know, I've seen her in this, and in Silent Hill, and in Red Widow, that short-lived TV series. But it always seems like she's better than her material a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I really wish somebody would take a chance to give her a really, like, nice, meaty role, similar to the one in this, let her, you know, really, really go.
The meatiest role that I've seen her in is Woody Allen's film, Melinda and Melinda.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite good in, actually. I like that movie quite a bit. Yeah, she certainly loves the genre picture. She's done a lot of those. Horror, thrillers, mysteries, sci-fi.
Yeah, Jim, like you were saying, I love this kind of science fiction where it's like a small story set in a bigger universe. Like, the stakes are very, like, just personal and at the moment rather than trying to save the universe.
Exactly. I think probably the closest parallel to this movie would probably be the original Alien, you know, in a lot of ways. That had that same kind of vibe, just very small, isolated story unto itself. Just, you know, we're telling a story with these characters. This is what we're going to focus on. And like you said, you know, we're not going to try to go for the giant opus, as it were.
Yeah, if these people don't make it, the world still goes on.
I mean, we don't even know what the world is. Like, this movie really throws you into the universe with very little explanation as to when we get what. Maybe we got the year. We get that we have interstellar travel, obviously, but I don't know if Earth's like a factor at all anymore. I think we're just going on different planets, and here we are. We're in this place now. We get
evidently space travel has a lot to do with dryer hoses. There are a lot of dryer hoses hanging out of the machinery there.
It works well because the plot's pretty, like, this could easily just be a thriller that has no sci-fi elements and still work. They could be in, like, the wilderness per se and, you know, still have the same basic plot beats to go through, and the story still seems intact. So, like, you're here and you have this sci-fi element that certainly adds, like, an intriguing twist to it. But I mean, the plot works on, you know, a relatable level, I guess.
Here we see Riddick being dangerous with his boots. Even though he's strapped in and everything else, he's still trying to take it out on his keepers, you know.
As much fun as we're going to have talking about Cole Hauser, which I imagine we will, I do think his character is pretty interesting, the character of Johns, because
he's not who he appears to be.
Yeah, I don't know why we're trying to not spoil this movie. If you're listening to a commentary for Pitch Black, I think you've probably seen Pitch Black, or at least don't care at this point.
Or you would watch it without the commentary first.
Yeah. I mean, Johns is, you know, he's a bounty hunter. I think at first we learned that. Do we even know that? We assume that he's law enforcement of some kind. Is that kind of?
Yeah. I don't think he says he's law enforcement, but he doesn't say he's not, and kind of leads Rhoda Mitchell's character to believe.
Yeah, he's even dressed that way too. I mean, his name's on his shirt and everything. Like, so it's interesting to learn more of his backstory. And you learn that, I mean, he's pretty much just as bad of a guy as Riddick is. That's kind of where you end up with this guy. And that's he's the most of the humans in this film. He becomes the most antagonistic opposed to Riddick does eventually. Even though Riddick has questionable morals that we can get into later on as well.
And I was a big fan of Farscape, so it was cool for me to see Claudia Black in this movie. She's always a welcome sight to my eyes, anyway. I don't know if you guys ever watched Farscape or not, but
I had this like goal to watch the entire series, and I got through like two episodes, and something happened, and I just never got back to it. I was liking what I was seeing, but I think
David Tui was like he wanted Claudia Black in here for like a reason. I don't have that offhand. Maybe it's in the commentary with him.
So, yeah, well, you guys are saying, like, Keith David is a recognizable character or character actor, but, like, his character in this is kind of... He's kind of expendable-ish if you line up all the characters together.
Yeah.
You can see him getting...
Right, I mean, usually he's a lot more of a tough guy, hardened character like you see in They Live or something, whereas in this he's more of... another tally mark to be killed, you know.
Yes.
And arguably one of the sadder characters because he loses both of his children in this movie and still lives.
Oh, you spoiled the whole emotional crux of the movie. Ah. Oh. I also like, and I noticed this in Pacific Rim too, that when they have the space, you know, ships and space hardware or whatever, it actually looks like it's been used and lived in. You know, that's something that really drives me nuts a lot, especially with CGI and in science fiction movies now. It just, you know, they make everything just look, you know, shiny and new, and it really tends to stick out. This really, I mean, it looks like, you know, they've been in the ship for a while. You know, it's beat.
Yeah. I agree. And, like, how in the world does this take place in the same place as the world as Chronicles of Riddick? It just...
It's this budget. I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's budget and just going huge, but, man... Like, this is a world, like, I you know, I feel like I can, you know, I can touch it, I can imagine what it's like. Riddick is just so fake in comparison.
I'll just have to blindly agree with you because that is kind of the feeling I have. I've seen Riddick twice. I saw it once in theaters, and then my mom is actually a fan of Riddick, so she liked The Chronicles of Riddick.
Apparently,
so I bought it for her, and I watched it again then.
It has a cult following, but I'm like, I want to know their...
I mean, I can understand why. I feel like because Vin Diesel's a D&D guy, but if you're like into that kind of role playing type world, I think Riddick has a lot to offer in that kind of sect of building out this universe and having all these different planets and creating new like character classes and races and the Furies and all that stuff. I think there's a lot to admire about what he's trying to do with that movie.
I think the fantasy aspects of that movie really appealed to Diesel, and that's why they went so heavy in the film. But ultimately, I agree with you, Brendan. They just did not work. Especially, I mean, like you said, this is a small, tight little thriller that could have easily been done on a wrecked ship on an island somewhere, or, you know, didn't have to have the sci-fi elements. Riddick is all about the sci-fi and fantasy elements. And, you know, that's why it's such a contrast from this. And I didn't like it as much anyway.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
No, you know, all respect to your mom. I mean,
oh yeah, no. I mean, I'm not a fan of the movie either. I feel like it has, it's way too long. As well. I mean, that's my biggest issue with it. It's way too long and try to do way too much. It's not that fun. Eventually, you get these great moments, but let's talk about this scene for a second, actually, because
he actually did that, yeah. Didn't he?
I think it's like a cut. Like there's some kind of cut where. Hold on, I think it's in the.
I had read here we go. Like, they CG'd his cuffs on him, but he actually.
Here's the IMDb trivia. Vin Diesel actually performed the shoulder dislocation stunt when Riddick breaks free from the second time for the crew, holding a chain between his hands. Although he couldn't do it with the cuffs on, the version we see is mostly him with some special effects thrown in. So, I mean, yeah, for the most part, yeah, he actually did do some crazy work there to bring his arms all the way around himself, which is really neat to watch.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to shout out really quick. I know we mentioned this before we're on the air, but... The Riddick video games, Assault on Butcher Bay and, like you were saying, Assault on Dark Athena, were totally solid. I mean, usually licensed games are not that great, but these, I mean, they were both really well done, I thought.
Yeah, for sure. In terms of the Riddick universe, and I do like the fact that there is a Riddick universe, the video games are my favorite iteration of the character. Right? The first one is particular, Escape from Butcher Bay. It's a very cool stealth game. The mechanics are all there. The voice actors are all... I mean, Vin Diesel was heavily involved in the game's production, and he was able to get a good cast involved and everything. It's just a really well-put-together video game that really capitalizes off the Riddick character and keeps the themes of Pitch Black alive, too, because you focus so much on the darkness aspect and trying to keep quiet as opposed to being an out-and-out, you know, action game, as Chronicles of Riddick was, essentially.
I really like the use of the different colored filters, too, when they're outdoors.
Yeah,
like, you know, you got this kind of like wash. It's like a yellow wash now, and we'll see the blue wash in the twilight later. I thought it was really effective.
That was one of my main takeaways from this film the first time I saw it. How cool the cinematography was for a movie that's called Pitch Black. You get this extended you get this whole first act essentially that focuses on capturing what this planet is and why it's a desert to begin with, because you have these three suns that go around it, and it creates this really. Tui's ideas for this were really interesting because it let him create a kind of a distinct visual palette for the film early on before just turning all the lights off completely. And even then, the film still looks interesting.
Yeah, and you know, I like too. They have these little—is it water devices that they're sipping out of, or are they?
Oh yeah,
is like really cool and you know you buy it like compared to where they go next time.
Yeah, and so like we get a little understanding that the oxygen's kind of thin there because it's not like Earth and it's not like terraformed, but it has some kind of atmospheric level, so they can kind of breathe. But they have these little devices that keep it out. They also have these little water devices so they can keep themselves hydrated because they're in a desert. And it's these little bits of information that really keep this world. I mean, since you're on this one planet for the duration of the film, and it's a desert, so it's like, how do we keep that interesting? And they came up with some good ideas, especially on the budget that they have to continue making it an interesting film to both watch and find out the details of, along with, you know, following along with the story.
Yeah, if they had maybe a feature film between this and Chronicles of Riddick that sort of started introducing a lot of stuff where they go to Chronicles of Riddick, maybe it'd be better instead of like a straight jump
into epic filmmaking
and overloading you with like planets and new races and peoples. Oh, yeah. And it's just you go from this simple little thriller to, I mean, a gigantic universe that's pretty fast paced in what it's overloading you with. It's quite a jump. It's a big
info dump for sure.
I think it's because Chronicles of Riddick could probably stand as like two films if you stretched out some of that material.
Oh yeah, there's
so much put in. I remember hearing like David Dewey, like he had like tomes that he put down to Universal of like what he had as far as ideas for this for the next couple movies went, and so I'm curious of like what changed for the upcoming Riddick, which seems more like a big budget remake of this movie.
Yeah, I have a feeling people won't be afraid to go back that didn't like Riddick because of the appeal of what the third one looks like, going back to what they liked about the original.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't sell that trailer short either. My wife has never seen Pitch Black or Riddick, but after seeing that trailer, I think before, must have been before Man of Steel, she was interested in seeing the new Riddick movie, so... Well, you know, it'd be interesting to see how it does.
It seems like it's wisely just focusing on the fact that Vin Diesel plays a badass character in some sci-fi world. It's not trying to connect itself to anything else explicitly, even though, you know, people obviously know that this character has existed before, but I enjoy what it's trying to do in its marketing.
Do you think the Blu-ray will end up being called The Chronicles of Riddick Riddick?
I won't be surprised if there's some kind of fun box art play with putting all these films together.
Or will they change Chronicles of Riddick to just Chronicles?
Well, even this movie's called, like, it's now called, like, what, Chronicles of Riddick Pitch Black? Like,
it's still called just Pitch Black to me.
Yeah, that's what I call it.
And say it'll always be Pitch Black to me.
Here's more fun stuff, too, that we don't quite ever get, like we're walking through, like, a graveyard of bones here, these giant alien beasts that we never see in the movie.
And something that Alien did well, too, just, like, you know, having that ship. Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, it's very, very much reminiscent. Yeah, I was going to say, it's reminiscent to me of them finding the space jockey.
Yeah.
You know, and all the fossilized bones and things like that in the original Alien. Which I just rewatched not too long ago, so that's why maybe it's still fresh in my mind.
I mean, it's fair. I mean, that's a movie that's, you know, that done. Heavily inspires a lot of the mechanics of this movie for sure. I love this stuff with just Vin Diesel working in the background. Like,
oh yeah,
they're all like clearly looking for him, and he's just like, whatever. I can do what I want. So I'm that good. And we kind of talked over, how this movie set itself up. Radha Mitchell's character is also quite interesting, because you start this movie off where her ship was crashing. She and her co-pilot, the captain was dead, and so she and the other guy are trying to land the ship, and she had to make this decision of, I'm going to try and kill the crew right now because I want us to survive. And that option was taken away from her.
Well, they weren't crew, they were just travelers.
Yeah, the travelers, yeah. The passengers. Like, she was concerned of saving herself and the other guy that just happened to be in there with her. And so you have this whole movie now devoted to her thinking about that thought and what it's going to mean to her, and that's going to lead to like what the ending is. And it's an interesting... these characters, for a B-movie, there's all these characters have little interesting tidbits about themselves that kind of make it work.
Yeah, well, and she's wrongly praised for saving their life. They all think that she saved them.
I do like this bit here where, you know, Riddick is kind of stalking her, you know, with her hair and like almost stabbing her, but not quite, and while she's talking. And like you said, he just doesn't care. He's enough of a badass that he will take his own sweet time with these people, you know?
And he did consider killing her too. Like, did that happen just then, or does it happen a little later on, where because Riddick knows that she could have killed all of them and she chose not to. And I think it's because he finds it interesting that he leaves her alone and wants to see how this plays out.
You know, with Rhoda Mitchell's character, it's interesting because she kind of reminds me her placement and how her art goes is a lot of a. Saffron Burroughs in a film a year earlier called Deep Blue Sea.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good comparison, yes.
It's like, wow.
Was that the one with the super shark that eats Samuel L. Jackson?
Yes.
That's right.
Sharks. Okay, I do remember
sharks,
that movie.
Sharks can't swim backwards.
I still want this toy. I want this toy. Where can I get this toy?
I'm pretty sure Cole Hauser and Tom Jane in those movies can play brothers in some other movie.
Yes.
Oh, he has three sons.
And a daughter.
Who, Keith David?
Yes.
There's a daughter?
Not in this movie.
Not in this movie, okay. He loses all three sons? When does he lose the third son? I guess I'll see. I forgot he has three sons.
Wait, isn't the third one Jack or Jake or whatever?
No, that's...
No?
No, because that's a girl.
Well, yeah, but is she dressed like one of them?
No, I mean they're all clearly like Muslim. I forget her story. I don't know why she's there? Let's see. Yeah, she's just there. Even this person has like a weird arc where it's like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm not a boy, I'm a girl. Who was then not cast in Chronicles of Riddick because she was not like tough enough, I believe. Something like that.
Or she didn't grow up to be hot enough.
She didn't grow up to be, yeah, that makes more sense. So they recast that character. Says so like that character wasn't brought back and Keith David's like killed off in the first 20 minutes of Chronicles of Riddick.
So would you say
like they have a little model so they can help you can help the audience visualize how this works with the three sons and whatnot?
It's neat how that I like how that's incorporated. It could be played cheesier, but it kind of works in the film. What are you gonna say, Brandon? Sorry.
I was gonna say. So would you say the transition from this to Chronicles of Riddick would be like going from A New Hope straight to Attack of the Clones, effects wise?
Yeah.
And trying to say they fit, but there's only like a 5-year gap between. Is it 5 years or four? It was 4 years.
That was 2004. So,
I'd say if you put the original Alien and then Prometheus right after it, it might be close.
Because
yeah. I mean, you have a lot more of the strange, Chariots of the Gods mysticism, weird stuff going on in Prometheus too. That really wasn't there in the first Alien movie.
That's fair in terms of establishing kind of a greater universe. But I think Attack of the Clones, I mean, it's also just, not being a good movie. And
yeah, that's not a good movie,
right? But, like, I was just going visually.
I get what you mean visually, but it's also, it's a lot more, globe, planet trotting in that movie as well.
You can say globe trotting. Yeah.
A lot of good editing in this movie, by the way. I really like the editing style here. Like, it really, it's making good use of the... Oh, Jesus. Guy just got shot. But you have that scene earlier where he's, like, digging, and it's just using, like, some neat cross-cutting in that action. You get some cool stuff with the, with, like, this scene's just now. Like, right here, you're gonna get this, like, whip zoom over to Riddick. That's pretty fun. That one right there.
This one actor seems... Yeah. Hey, have a beer with Riddick. One actor seems like the guy you'd hire if you couldn't get Matt Farrar.
Yeah.
Cole Hauser. Shut up.
Sure.
I got the subtitles out, so I'm just reading. It's ridiculous.
It's Riddick.
It's just fun how he just pops up all over the place. And I love this.
Like, where's Waldo?
Yeah.
I love this in terms of kind of the way the sun plays an effect on the world, I love this one the best. This like steely blue. We're gonna soon eventually get our first taste of the aliens in this film. Who plays the wine connoisseur guy?
Alien Attack brought to you by Shaky Cam.
Here's one thing that totally dates it, makes it feel... I mean, I know this is 2000, but this is totally a 90s thing, is the effect with the... where they, like, stretching the aspect ratio out.
Yeah, I know, so, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah,
like, Star Trek First Contact has it a bunch, and, like, Alien 3.
Does, like, The Relic do that?
It's like, yeah, I think so.
It's kind of like just kind of 90s monsters movies.
Yeah, I don't get what effect that's, I mean, what that's supposed to generate or anything, or just, is it supposed to just be weird? Is that?
I get, yeah, it's going to give you like a sense of the unknown, and it's something that I guess worked in one movie, so every director copied it.
Yeah, it just doesn't, I mean, it might have been a music video technique too. But
that would not be surprising at all, actually.
Because, yeah. I mean, David Fincher used it in Alien 3, and he was a music video director prior, so... It just severely dates these movies.
We're not getting the Hype Williams fisheye lens. So
no.
I could say Hype Williams fisheye lens. You're like, yep, that's a 90s music video director right there. Getting jiggy with it.
So is it kind of funny that Riddick bangs his chains in the new one the same way he does in this?
I think they're certainly trying to...
The callback.
Yeah, they're trying to go for, you know, people like these things, I guess.
Yeah. People, remember when he just banged his chains around? Do that again.
Yeah, notice they're doing callbacks to this movie, not to Chronicles.
Yes.
That we know of.
Well, isn't
in the trailer.
Carl Urban in the
Carl Urban's one? In it? Yeah, he's bad.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm like, based on how, because Chronicles of Riddick ends where he's just like he becomes king, right?
Yeah,
and he's king of the castle, and he's just kind of sitting on the throne. He slumps in his chair. It's like, all right, now I'm this again. So I'm curious of like how it's gonna grow from that to like Riddick being on the run on another planet.
If they say it didn't happen, I'll go with them.
Yeah, it looked more like that. The new movie took place like right after this one, you know. He's a, you know, wanted criminal, he's got a bounty, you know, all those kind of things. Whereas even Chronicles of Riddick, he was the chosen one and all that other crap.
So. Even the beginning of Chronicles, it starts off like this one where isn't he like on the run in that film? Like he's
on the run, and then he's also, I mean, there's a portion of the film where he's incarcerated.
In prison, yeah.
So,
I like the that theme part.
I like the prison stuff where he's stuck there and
it's really everything that involves, like, the whatever monarchy system's going on. That's the stuff that slows that movie down for me. But, I mean, everything else in Chronicles of Riddick, I think there's... I mean, it has solid action, for sure. Like, there's a lot of good things in that movie. It just doesn't add up to, like, being one that's a sci-fi film for the ages in any way.
Yeah, I mean, there's too many long stretches of absolute boredom in it that just... And, I mean, there's none of the action sequences that are really that good.
Well, there's that trailer shot with, like, that thing falling on top of him or whatever.
And a lot of it looks just so fake that it's hard to get, for me personally, get into it.
Doesn't, like, the one planet, on the prison planet, like, the sun, like, it's always burning that planet or something? And,
yeah, it's, like, 700 degrees or something outside.
Yeah, you could tell in that movie there were a lot of moments that they expected the audience to be in, you know, enwrapped in awe and wonder, but actually just kind of inspired yawns.
Yeah.
It's like, it was also like the near the beginning of that CG period, or near the end of that CG period where CG really looked like CG a lot. Like,
yeah, I point it wasn't to
the first
bad,
Raimi Spider-Man
just...
movie, you know?
Yeah.
It's like it looks good, but you can tell that it's CG because they didn't really get the... You know, the texturing and shading like they have now.
Of the Star Wars prequels, yeah.
Yeah.
Good example, yeah. It's a real good example.
Where it's like, oh, this looks cool, but I'm totally don't believe anyone's where they're at.
Trying to get those Rada Mitchell down blow shots, guys.
I am.
You know.
And apparently those Rada Mitchell ass shots. The hot desert where they filmed was actually about 50 degrees Fahrenheit. They were misting water on the actors to make it appear as if they were sweating.
Hey, only lady who knows how to drive the ship. Why don't we put you in the deep, dark cave with the monster?
I like how it goes from, like, a cave in, like, the, like, sandy rocks to, like, immediately a set. that's the cave now.
One of the few normally lit scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, in any movie ever where they put a rope around the person and lead them into a cave or a room or whatever, has that ever worked?
Every single movie, they always
pull back the rope and there's nothing on it.
It never seems to lead to the rope coming back with the person attached to it.
Yes,
regardless exactly. If that person died or not.
The only time I could think that ever worked was Poltergeist.
Yeah. Or make the movie where they do all the precautions and just walk out and be like, well, we didn't need this. Ooh, monsters. I think the monsters in this movie still hold up.
I do, too. I agree.
Surprisingly. These could have been really cheap-looking, but...
Yeah, but well, I think it's because they're used just the right way. I mean, it works that the movie's called Pitch Black and that it takes place in darkness, but, I mean, you never get
No lingering shots.
No lingering shots that really emphasize the fact that it's a creation. I think even the end, where Vin Diesel kind of gets all up in its face, all up in its grill, it does a good job of kind of... placing you with the character as opposed to with the alien, so you don't really focus on, hey, that's not real. Here's that stretchy shot again.
Yep.
But like even this shot right here, where you just kind of see them like there, it's like it's cool looking. It's not, and it looks like a threat. It doesn't look like that's not scary. I mean, it's like, oh no, that's neat. That's an interesting thing I haven't seen before. It's like this weird raptor mixed with an alien from Alien type thing.
They look like they fit in the environment, too.
For sure, yeah. I mean, it definitely... Again, it works with the world building. Like, it's like they've obviously evolved in a way that makes sense.
They're not, like, really overthought, either.
Yeah, they're very... There's hardly more to them than just dimension.
I'll make it look like the alien from Alien, but don't make it look like the alien from Alien.
Yeah, let's keep it to one jaw, guys.
You know, it's funny that the trappings that Riddick is in at the beginning of the movie kind of look H.R. Giger inspired when he's got the thing in his mouth and the blindfold over him kind of looks.
Here we go.
Yeah. Let's do that again.
Smacking them chains.
And with the tagline for
this, come out to play.
The tagline for the series is "You're not afraid of the dark, are you?"
Yeah.
Right? That's in that's in the trailer for the new one, right?
I mean, that's a Vin Diesel catchphrase. You know, aside from "I live my life a quarter mile at a time," and obviously those memorable phrases from XXX. You just got Xander zoned or whatever he's saying.
I like to forget as much of XXX as I can.
I don't mind XXX. I don't think it's awful.
I haven't thought about that movie until you just said it, since it probably came out.
I like that it was James Bond to the extreme, man. Extreme. He's not just snowboarding. There's an avalanche behind him. Extreme.
Extreme times three. It's XXX.
Yeah.
Three X's. It's triple extreme. That's like drinking a Mountain Dew and a Four Loko.
It is like that. It is like that example.
You know, if they couldn't get Vin Diesel back for Riddick, you know who could have played Riddick? Ice Cube.
Yeah, I kept thinking that every time. I was like, man, Ice Cube will be so good in this movie, too. Like, why can't they be like a buddy movie or something?
They're pretty much interchangeable.
Yeah,
they could just make it another installment of the Are We There Yet series.
Yeah.
Are We Extreme Yet? I got it.
Yeah. Ice Cube could do Pacifier 2, and Vin Diesel could take over the Are We There Yet.
Here we go, man. I wish I had a camera. Why? Because it's going to be one hell of a trick. Classic. Classic. Yeah.
So for...
Is this the first, like, extended dialogue scene with Riddick? Like, he's had narration, obviously, but he might have said something to Roddy Mitchell, but I think this is the first time he's had, like, you know, a conversation with the character. Yeah. 30 minutes into the movie.
The way he holds the gun, he looks like he could be in a Boys in the Hood movie.
Yeah, or co-star in Harsh Times with Christian Bale or something. He could be in a David Ayer cop movie. One of those.
Boy, with the HD of the Blu-ray, you can really see their sweat pores.
Yeah. Way of the future.
Tell us the future, because that's what all suitcases look like in the future. It's a YouTube video.
I always liked that shot quite a bit, actually, that kind of bendy. We're back to a nice sepia, by the way.
Yes. Yeah, now, each of the tints represents which sun they're closest to, right?
I believe so.
Is that what it's supposed to be?
Yeah, or just, you know, how it's... Which one's illuminating the sky the most. I mean, so, yeah, I guess which one would be closest at the time. Okay.
I'm the wimpy guy. I'm going to make friends with the mean guy.
And is this
look at him chug that fruit punch. He must be thirsty.
Is this the most hair Vin Diesel's had in a film until Find Me Guilty?
I gotta check my Boiler Room stuff. I think he might have been. I think he might have been tied with Boiler Room. Let's see. Harry Vin Diesel. That'd be a weird search to put, so I'm not going to do
that. You might not want to see what comes up with that.
I would totally disregard all the DeviantArt links that come up. It's pretty interesting how this whole Marvel thing with Vin Diesel, at first everybody thought he was going to play the Vision, because he was, you know, standing in front of an Avengers poster, kind of motion toward the Vision, and then it turns out he's going to be the voice of Groot, I guess.
Yes.
In the Guardians of the Galaxy. Which I think is great. I thought he was awesome as the Iron Giant, you know, Superman, you know?
Yeah.
Considering Groot only has the one word of dialogue to deliver, which is Groot, I think he can handle it.
He said he always likes to do the unexpected. So they may have offered him a bigger Marvel character, and he took that.
I pointed to a picture of Luke Cage in a Twitter picture, and so obviously I'm now being rumored for playing that character.
I had heard that.
That's all you have to do.
That's all you gotta do, huh? I mean, it worked for Simon Pegg. He pointed at Ant-Man.
I'd say, yeah.
He's playing Ant-Man.
That's how you do it.
He's pretty much there. I'm trying to figure out who I want to point at. I'm not sure yet.
See, how much hair did he have in Knock Around, guys? Oh, about the same as Riddick. Okay.
That's a movie I fell asleep to.
It's a movie.
Yeah, that was definitely a movie.
Seth Green dies in that movie. Spoilers.
Wasn't that during the Let's Make Barry Pepper a Leading Man phase?
Well, that's why that movie got delayed, because like Seth Green, Vin Diesel, and Barry Pepper were all like becoming like they were becoming stars all of a sudden, and so they tried to like hold that movie off, and they released it, and then it bombed, and we're still Barry Pepper's still not he's still waiting in the wings.
He's playing like bearded Hill Jacks now, isn't he?
Yeah, yes, bearded Hill Jack is what's on his record.
Where you're like, wait, is that Barry Pepper? Yep.
Yeah, like True Grit, I did not realize it was him until the second time I saw it. Like,
oh, yeah.
I did not think about it at all.
Well, and Snitch was probably his most normal part, but he still had like a 3-foot beard.
Bearded Hill Jacks. I like that Riddick's left such an impression on this young boy/girl that she's like, I need to dress just like this person.
Yes. The bit of humor in the film. Because there's really not a whole lot of humor.
I think there's just
Riddick, but...
Yeah, I mean, there's a sardonic sense of humor with Vin Diesel. I mean, that's just more of a effortless, cool thing going on rather than like, hey, these are fun lines. I like this one right here, though.
He's pretty captivating in this movie, Vin Diesel. I mean, I remember his voice. I was like, man, that voice is cool.
I remember Ebert and Roper talking about Riddick in this movie, or Vin Diesel in this movie, and like they didn't like the movie, or like they gave it kind of like an okay rating, but like I remember they really liked Vin Diesel, and they liked the potential that he had as an action star, where they could just see like they could envision a poster that just said Diesel, and
yeah,
like, it's just like it fits so well.
Yeah, it's funny because I mean people picking this movie up for the first time now, I don't think we'll get the full experience of back then at all, because now Vin Diesel, you know, he's a name, and plus, you know, there's a sequel, because I think knowing that the Riddick character carries on further kind of hampers a fresh viewing of this movie.
That's fair, but I think if you're watching this movie and you're going with it, I think the best kind of thing that can happen in a movie is that you lose yourself in it. And
well, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it depends on, I mean, the viewing situation, I would say, or something like that. But I mean, I think it does a good job of keeping you in the moment, I think, that with this movie.
Because one of the best things this movie does is its survivors are totally random.
Yeah, you look at this cast, and you could pick out a few of them, maybe, that would be like, all right, these guys are obviously going to die. But
you would guess Rodda Mitchell makes it.
Yeah, you would easily, yes.
That's about the easiest one to guess, and then you're like, okay, well, probably one to two other people are going to make it out with her.
There's four children.
Probably the kid.
There's four children in this movie, so one of them has to.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't have all of them survive. That's too many children.
Yeah, exactly.
And you feel like Keith David's going to get it. Like, I really was shocked that he made it through the movie.
And the Matt Furrow top guy, you definitely know he's going to bite it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he, that guy's just like, yeah, he's gone.
It's full of people you think are going to bite it.
Claudia Black's like, well, there's already two women here, and one of them seems more important, so.
Your ancillary character will not survive.
You're in the Xander zone. That's what he said to that kid before he got killed.
But, I mean, if you're watching this now and you know Vin Diesel, you know Vin Diesel's going to make it.
Just, yeah,
because he's Vin Diesel. Like, someone's going to make it out of the movie, and it's probably Vin Diesel.
I love when I know they've done this like a million times in movies, but when they lock the door behind themselves and something's always worse inside.
I just like that you can take a gun to the lock and automatically shoot the door open.
No locksmith, no problem.
I also like Cole Hauser's laser tag vest that he's wearing. That's fun.
Yeah.
He was on his way to Chuck E. Cheese when the ship crashed, so.
He's got a lot of tokens, but nowhere to spend them.
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing like when you watch an 80s slasher film and you watch it, they introduce the cast in the first 10 minutes, you're like, yeah, they're going to die, they're going to die.
Yeah.
They're going to die. They'll probably survive. Yeah. I mean, so much so they made a point of talking about in Cabin in the Woods, you know.
Which Aaron, do you think Scott Mendelson would refer to this as a Cabin in the Woods movie?
Because
he refers to Prometheus as one, and I'm kind of like, I don't know about that.
I think I could see it in Prometheus more than I can in this movie, I would say.
Well, the tropes are there. I mean, you know, you have the group slowly being winnowed away by, you know, an unseen force.
It's just I don't know. I can't see this on a whiteboard, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, what you bet on to make this scenario happen in Cabin in the Woods.
Always gotta have chains.
Now we're back to blue. Somebody's been filming a Dio video down there.
It's a lot of hair.
Here, hold my purse.
Now, this
I'm not
kinda
gonna hold your purse.
Is this kind of like one of the last like sci-fi movies of this type for a while? Because like it was 2000, but the Matrix type movies started building up shortly after, right? We didn't get these little small ones. It was all big chosen one stuff.
Sci-fi. It's funny, you know. I guess it kind of swings back and forth, you know. I mean, Alien was kind of a reaction to Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, this is kind of a reaction to The Matrix in a way. Matrix came out, what, 99, the year before this, right?
Yes.
The only movie I can think of that's like on a small scale like this recently has been Europa Report, which I just watched a couple weeks ago.
In terms of simplicity with sci-fi, yeah.
Yeah, like a smaller scale sci-fi story.
And characters that aren't necessarily making stupid decisions.
Like, before this, we have Cube, probably, was on this level?
In terms of what, minor budgeted sci-fi pieces? Yeah. I'm not a Cube guy.
You're not a Cube fan?
I'm not a Cube fan, though.
Oh, I like that movie a lot when
I like
out.
What it's trying to do, but I dislike Cube in the same way I dislike Saw, where I admire what's trying to be accomplished, but I just don't think it works overall.
Gotcha.
It's just because I'm frustrated with the characters, and I do think they make stupid decisions, and they're not the best actors in either of those movies.
You don't enjoy Cary Elwes going way too big?
Well, he goes big, but I don't like Lee Whannell at all in that movie. I think he's terrible in that role.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Saw movies either. I like the idea more than I like the execution.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying with that and Cube. These two talking. Are they sitting in like a news van? Is that what they're?
This is where he's saying, like, I'm telling Riddick he's going free, but, you know, he's not going free.
That got him right where I want him.
And do we know exactly what Riddick's done, that he's this murderer?
I think we're just being told that he is murderer. Like, I don't think we actually have specifics on.
And that's all they do in the second one, too, right? They just, he's a murderer.
The second one, they downplay the fact that he's a murderer a lot. I think they get they've established that he's badass because he's Riddick, but I think they downplay the fact that he's committed crimes and he's I mean, this one, you could argue, he's also, it doesn't play up his actual crimes, it just plays up the fact that he's most likely murdered people, but I mean, you certainly question what his agenda is in this movie. That one, you're just more like, oh, he's just a rogue.
My hair's not short enough, I have to carve it off with a knife right now.
Too hot.
It's too hot.
A personal shaving.
It got to an eighth of an inch. I can't have that.
Personal shaving appliance.
I guess.
That is like one of the most badass things in this movie, though. Using like engine grease to shave his head.
What was that all about?
Welcome to the Xander Zone.
I guess. I wonder if he says that in real life, but he says, welcome to the diesel zone or something.
You're not afraid of the diesel, are you?
That's what he says post-coitus. You've just been filled up with diesel.
Or does he say you're not afraid of the VD, are you?
The VD.
Big weekend when this came out. This came out President's Day weekend back in February. The Whole Nine Yards, first place. I like that movie quite a bit. Hanging Up, Nora Ephron film. Second place. Then Pitch Black. Third place. Then Boiler Room is down at like sixth.
Don't remember this much dialogue in this movie. having, you know, putting, rewatching it now, there's a lot more dialogue than I remember.
Yeah, I mean, it really does a... It gets itself going with setting up of Riddick being... It tries to set... Does it? Would you think it tries to set you up of thinking Riddick's the bad guy in this movie, that he's the one you just can't trust at all?
Yeah.
Or are you still kind of thinking...
Well, now it's two bad guys. You got Cole Hauser...
He's slowly going off the rails. That's kind of the...
Who's being revealed right now to be, you know, someone who's not who he is. But then you got Riddick, who... He is bad. But now... Do you trust Riddick and go with him, or do you trust Cole Hauser as far as you can and go with him? Whereas Rhoda Mitchell is pretty much our main character, and now she has two villains to go along with the supernatural.
The least likely devil and angel combo, Cole Hauser and Vin Diesel sitting on
yes.
Rhoda Mitchell's shoulders. Rhoda Mitchell's tiny...
See, that's what I like about this movie when I first saw it was... Just that Riddick, he's cool to watch and all that, but you still can't trust him by the end of the movie.
Yeah, he's not he doesn't turn into a teddy bear. He continues being an asshole. Like that's like most of the things he does to help people are out of necessity for himself for the most part.
Yeah, and at the end when Rhoda Mitchell gets carried away by the thing, it kind of looks like he could have done something but just lets her go. Just the way it's shot.
We'll see. I mean, we'll get there.
We'll get there.
Because I like how that ending plays.
I do. I do too, but it's just like... It's what it kind of looks like. Cole Hauser shooting it in the eye.
Here we go. Here's a fun scene.
According to IMDb, this was Cole Hauser's idea.
Yeah.
He, like, learned about
it. This is how I do it at home, man.
That scene was in Good Will Hunting, right?
It was in Looper, too, wasn't it? Where Jiggles is shooting himself in the eye?
Well, yeah, that was actually... Yeah. Yes.
But they were just doing drops in the eye.
Right.
Cole Hauser's hardcore.
Yeah, he was taking needles. needles to the tear duct. That's a fun line. Owens is already dead. His brain just hasn't caught up to the fact. That's funny. Man, this is the guy that'll become a Miami drug kingpin in Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yeah, he's in two Vin Diesel franchises, yet only stars in one movie with him.
I mean, come on, Fast 7.
You think he'll come back? He's got to come back and
Jason
Tyrese.
Statham, Tony Jaa, and Cole Hauser? That's a trifecta I wouldn't want to pass up for the world.
Yes. Like, he's got to get his revenge on Tyrese.
Wouldn't that be amazing if Cole Hauser, like Jason Statham, so like fed up with the Fast and Furious crew that he's like, I'm gonna get out all their old enemies, and so he gets.
He's got to be in their back. He's got to be he's got to be on the Rolodex soon to call.
Exactly.
Bring back.
So like him, and then Eva Mendes gets back in there, and then I'm happy.
Yeah. What? She just popped up for that little end credits tag.
She doesn't go international.
No.
She's FBI in D.C.
There we go.
Wherever the hell.
Cole Hauser also been in three movies with Bruce Willis.
Okay, let me see if I
can... None of them I recommend to anybody.
Let me see if I can figure them out, because I know... Okay, obviously for A Good Day to Die Hard. Let's see, what's another one? Surrogates?
No.
No? Okay.
Although Rhoda Mitchell was in there.
I was going to say Rhoda Mitchell was in Surrogates, though, wasn't she?
Yes.
Who was the other person? Was it Rosamund Pike? Who was the other person in Surrogates? Let's see. Okay, the other Bruce Willis Cole Hauser movies. Let's see. That's a fun part, too. Riddick just jumps in.
They were very close together.
Very close together. Okay. Okay, this is going to take too long. What is it? What are they? What are the other movies?
Heart's War and Tears of the Sun.
How are those close together? I remember Tears of the Sun.
2002 and 2003.
Oh, those are the other two movies were close together. Okay.
Yeah.
I remember Tears of the Sun now. I forgot about Heart's War.
How could you forget about Hearts War?
Young Terrence Howard and Colin Farrell's other we need to put him in everything movie during that time. We had Daredevil, Hearts War, Minority Report. They're just we need to just put him into blockbusters, guys.
He's box office gold.
Phone Booth, which I like a lot.
He's gonna be the next Barry Pepper.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
Or the next Arnie Hammer.
Tigerland's great though. That his debut movie or whatever. That movie's fantastic. Good Joel Schumacher. I mean, him and Joel Schumacher made a good combo. I like giving credit to Joel Schumacher when I can. He has some valleys, but he has some good peaks. Comes the fun eclipse. I love the sound editing too with the creatures once the eclipse takes effect.
Yeah, definitely.
I love it enough where I'd want to research what they use to make those sounds. Riddick's badass. He carries two oxygen things or batteries.
Those are the biggest spark plugs I've ever seen.
Yeah. Keith David, carry one.
Yeah, I'm Keith David. I don't want to pull on my back, all right? I got to make a real movie after this.
Yeah. I got to go to a Gargoyles convention.
Yeah, I got to do voice acting for Saints Row 4.
I hear there's an unlockable They Live costume in Saints Row 4.
Now I have to buy it. I love that movie so much, more than I should. I should write a blog sometime of movies that I love way more than I should. They Live is one, Escape from New York is one, Buckaroo Banzai. I know they're not great movies, but I love them, and I would watch them at any time.
Escape from New York is great.
It's a great movie.
I agree. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. I just love that movie from top to bottom.
I think They Live is a great movie, too. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, I do, too. I'm just saying, they aren't, Roger Ebert isn't going to throw them on his, God rest his soul. If you're alive, you wouldn't put them as top 100 movies, is what I'm saying,
Maybe not the top 100, but I think he had an affinity for John Carpenter.
Yeah, I'm a big Carpenter fan.
Actually, that said, now that I think about it, I know he actually didn't like The Thing, and he wasn't a huge fan of some of the other Big Trouble, Little China. But Halloween gave one of his favorite slasher movies ever.
He's the man who made who turned Halloween around. They give him a lot of credit for that.
Yeah,
because it was doing poorly, and then his review apparently came out, and box office sales went up.
It still holds up.
I love Halloween.
I probably watched Escape from New York more than any other movie.
Really?
Maybe. If I had to think about it, yeah. Huh.
John Carpenter from 78 to 89 is awesome.
When was Prince of Darkness? 87?
Yeah, and then he had In the Mouth of Madness in the 90s, which was...
It's a movie.
It's got a lot of fans.
It does. I saw that trilogy. I watched The Thing, In the Mouth of Madness, and Prince of Darkness, his Apocalypse trilogy, which is fun to do.
Andy did his own soundtrack. Should get him credit for that.
Oh yeah,
I love his scores are great.
Him and I always wanted to see let's watch Claudia Black die for a second because it's pretty fun. Where she gets ripped in half.
Should have laid down.
Yep. Riddick needs to lay down.
You know what the difference between Riddick and Dominic Toretto is?
What?
A white tank top.
He's dark in this movie.
Yeah.
That movie's all about family. Families wear white tank tops. This is very nice, too, this shot. You have all these things breaking apart. Just the way it looks on film and everything, it just looks like this is like a 90s scene.
Let's just stand out here dramatically and look at the monsters for a while.
I always like Riddick Vision, also.
Yeah. It's a universal movie, all right. And now, halfway into the film, it is now finally pitch black.
The convenient eclipse that happens every 22 years.
Well, there's also the convenient Vin Diesel's eyes.
Yes.
The convenient nocturnal animals that only live every 23 years.
It's impressive how they can make all these contrivances work to the film's advantage.
Yeah. It's something you don't even care about. It's like when you're thinking about it like a day after, you're like, yeah, it was kind of convenient, but when you're watching the film, it doesn't matter at all.
When you lay it out on a checklist, yeah, it's like, oh, they happen to land on the planet that happens to have an eclipse every 22 years, and it happens to be the 22nd year, but they happen to have a guy that can see in the dark to defend themselves to the animals against that can happen to see it that only come out in the dark.
Every 22 years.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it works in the context, you know. Oh, we just sprayed for aliens. Once they get in the walls, there's nothing you can do.
Who would want to piss glass? That sounds terrible.
Who'd want to light a lighter when they have all those flashlights?
Vin Diesel wore contacts, right? It's not yes. CG on his eye. Okay.
No, he just has that ability in real life. He wears human eye contacts when he's not in his movie.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's why they cast him. He's an X-Man.
Yeah, there's there's something. The contacts that Vin Diesel wore to play Riddick were a prototype. After the first day of filming, when he tried to remove the contact lenses, they couldn't. Due to where they were filming, they had to have an optometrist flown into the nearest town 3 hours away. Diesel called the contacts hubcaps. Also, the character of Riddick was a woman in an early draft of the script. That's a fun fact.
That would have been interesting. Who do you think would have played Riddick as a woman? Angelina Jolie? At that juncture, Famke Janssen, maybe?
You gotta shave your head, though, obviously, right? That's the only way to play this role. I'd say Sigourney Weaver would have went for it.
I think it's too close to Alien. I don't think Sigourney
Weaver. That's why she... Okay, all right, fine, fair enough. That said, this movie was out in theaters the same time Galaxy Quest was still in theaters. Let's see, women around 2000s.
Jeez. Is that a Google search right there? Women around 2000s.
I mean, David Dewey wrote G.I. Jane, so he could have convinced Demi Moore to come back. Or maybe he got Janine Triplehorn from Waterworld. Get in here. Where's Janine Triplehorn been? There's a question.
Yeah.
Basic Instinct 3. Basic Harder.
The basicest.
Sorry, Gene. I keep saying Janine. Gene Triplehorn. My bad.
Even more basicest.
Looks the poster.
Yeah.
Oh, now it's the Alien Vision. Stay by me. I'm the star of this movie. Nothing
Listen to the man who knows what he's talking about. If there's one thing you shouldn't do, it's disobey what Riddick is telling you. Okay, so that doesn't help.
I'm really stumped at
I love this shot right here. You're going to see like its claw. The way its claws come out always look like that's like a cool 3D shot, even though it's not in 3D.
Yeah.
It's there, right? That one. There. Like it's like that's like crazy. It's not 3D. And dead. Clever girl.
It's better than Clash of the Titans.
Yeah. There we go. The 3D in Pitch Black is better than Clash of the Titans.
That's not saying much. Let's fire blindly into the ceiling.
Cole Hauser style.
It always works so well.
If you were to cast Cole Hauser as a superhero, which one would you pick for him?
Aquaman.
Aquaman.
Right off the bat, I love it. And it works.
Henry, look at his hair.
Shield agent Henry Gyrich. He was like a total dickbag in the run of Avengers when Shield tried to take the Avengers.
A total bag of dicks.
Just a big bag of dicks. What can I say?
Bag of dicks.
I mean, at this point, he'd play a villain, right? Like, he'd have to.
I'd give him, like, a really crappy villain, like Batroc the Leaper or, the Unicorn or somebody really crappy like that.
It's weird that Cole Hauser, who's not, like, an actor I dislike, but it just seems like he's the kind of guy that has one of those faces that generates, like, you automatically don't trust him at all.
Yeah.
He has one of those faces.
You look at that guy for 30 seconds, you're like, yeah, he's a dick. So that's why I would cast him that way, I guess.
At best, he's rival detective.
Rival detective. Yeah,
in the American
of
Hot
Hauser's on. What do you mean he's on? He's terrible. Everybody hates him. You're off the case.
Keith David likes those layers. This must be hot.
It helps when the sun's shining.
Yeah. I wonder if it's still warm on that planet after the 20-year eclipse or however long it's supposed to. How long is the eclipse supposed to last? Do we know that information?
I think it's like a month.
Yeah, it's like something super long, right? It's not like a...
I don't think it was that long, because they get light back, don't they, before the end of the movie?
No, no, they don't.
Nope.
Oh, okay, you're right. It's at the very end. Okay.
The movie may not start out pitch black, but it ends it.
Yeah.
It gets there. Imagine if they didn't cast Jack Black as Riddick.
Ooh.
Pitch Jack Black.
Jack Black in pitch black. Riddle, follow us!
Ooh, we're gonna get in a place.
Almost circumcised Cole Hauser. Willy, wah!
Big Willy style. Now I am trying to think of why, like, Jack is around. I guess I always figured that he/she was like part of like with like Claudia Black's character or something.
I don't know.
I like the way the movie tries to resolve the idea of like, hey, we have no sun in the rest of the movie. How do we illuminate scenes based off of that?
Right. And like you were saying before, it definitely uses the darkness trope to its advantage with the special effects. You know, sure. They don't have to CGI as much, and they get a lot more bang for their buck not showing the aliens very much. It's interesting to me they shot this whole movie in 60 days. It's pretty quick.
It's especially quite confident. It works well too.
Yeah, it's like. Pretty quick for out in the location shooting in the desert and whatnot.
I like this right here. It's cool. I said it looks cool.
Kind of reminds me of the kaiju in Pacific Rim.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. The head. The hammerhead shark kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a month-long eclipse.
Okay.
That happens every 22 years. And at the time of this movie, it's due to start shortly.
Is that the PDF copies of David Toohey's tomes for the Chronicles of Riddick?
The Memoirs of Toohey. It's after the chapter entitled Working with Charlie.
Yay, the Book of Toohey.
Nice,
Volume 4, Chapter 8.
Nice brief foreshadowing with the I'll blow liquid onto something and it'll explode higher. Which was the coolest trailer shot by far. Is that foreshadowing that she's menstruating? Is that what that was?
Quit staring at your hand.
Oh, it's a weird plot point, too, by the way. She's menstruating, guys. That's why they're following us. They can smell.
Thanks for including that.
They can smell the blood.
Reminds me of Friday the 13th Part 2, where they tell the girls they need to make sure they keep clean because it'll attract the bears.
That must be what happened to Miley Cyrus last night.
Bears.
You just dated the commentary.
Sorry.
We all just stuck our tongue out. I like how Johns is like, I don't need to do any work at all, even though I have no other plan for us surviving. Yeah.
And just shoot it up in my eye.
Yeah, cool Hauser.
He's got a name that would have worked as an action star.
Hauser.
Just didn't have the look.
I mean, in Good Will Hunting 2, hunting season, I'm sure he had like a crazy action
scene. Yeah.
How you like them apples, bitch?
Here's cool fun. I love this stuff with like the aliens just kind of around. Sorry.
Flight from IKEA.
The planet inhabitants. The local wildlife. There we go. Why do we stop? Oh no.
Turn out the lights. The party's over.
He just loves shooting blindly at stuff that he can't
see.
Yeah,
he does. And now
he can't shoot blindly in the darkness now.
Wine guy makes like the worst decisions.
Yeah, he screwed everything up.
He did screw everything up. Like, they're all perfectly fine, and he's like, I gotta crawl away.
Oops. Did I do that? And now he bit. Oh, I spilled ketchup all over me. I'll never get this out of my robe.
That's my blood.
But we get this great moment right here.
Yeah, this is nice.
Yes.
That's such a cool thing that happens.
So cool.
I didn't necessarily need to see this next shot where they're like, hey, let's watch him being eaten by things, but...
That would have been good enough right there.
I'm just going to watch him being... I'm not going to say anything or react. Waving, hey, waving with their tails. What's up, Riddick?
And see, even still, we still have different kind of color schemes going. I'll get that. We had the blue light going, now we have the green light, and now we have like just the regular fire. It's like the movie's obviously has a budget, and it's working well to kind of make it work for what the premise of this movie is.
Right.
And even get the outskirts of the eclipse is at play, but you get a sense that the planet is moving. It has to, because you see kind of in the background there's a bit of light going on. Like it's doing its best to not seem like a cheat that there's light in the scene.
Right. My voice is gravelier than yours, my friend. No, I'm afraid mine is gravelier than yours. If I had a gravelly voice, I could have been the star of this movie, but no.
There we go. Yep. Oh, yeah, I'm Yep. No penis down there, guys.
I look like a young Wentworth Miller, but no, actually.
I'm all woman, man.
No, this is not a good time for a tampon commercial. Could we get on with this? Sometimes I just don't feel
nose
so
open.
Aliens attack me.
Oof. That look, Cole Gabe.
Oh, sure. Blame it on her.
Yeah, I forgot. Actually, Cole Hauser has a lot to do on the DVD or on the Blu-ray because he has, like, the John's files where it's, like, him recording him, like, doing, like, bounty hunting, tracking of Riddick.
Like, oh, yeah.
We really
is it, like, audio files? Or?
Yeah, they're, like, audio files, and it's just, like, a lot more backstory for John's and his search for Riddick.
Is it, like, John's journal?
It's something
March
like...
8th.
It is something like that. It's like him swearing a lot. That's what I recall from it. Like, he's just like really pissed off the whole time because he can't.
Didn't F him find him today.
Yeah.
He's in both the video games, too. Both the Riddick video games. I'd forgotten he was in Dazed and Confused.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
His hair was even more curly.
Wow.
I like that cool moment he tries to have right there. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. You're right. There really are. I mean, I really like the conscious use of the different color lighting and stuff. He's getting a little crazy, so they've gone to like this green tint, you know, as he's kind of losing his mind. It's a nice effect. It's good continuity. We've seen this before.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. I'm going to go ahead and shout out my love for the film Red Planet with Val Kilmer. Same year as this movie. I think it was in January, I think.
Yeah. Oh, was it?
Yeah. This is like a month before this one. Because that and like Mission to Mars came out not too long.
Yeah.
Oh, my
Tim
bad.
Robbins
okay, it's
Mission to Mars, right?
Sorry. Yes. No, my bad. Red Planet came out in November 2000. Mission to Mars must have been, I guess...
Well, I think it was summer, right?
Is it summer? Maybe?
Maybe spring.
They both bombed. Maybe spring. Maybe it was like an April movie.
I remember them coming out like one right after the other, though. Not being able to distinguish them.
Mars. Let's see. Mission to Mars. Yeah, March. Yeah.
Oh, it was March? Okay.
Red Planet.
So spring and fall.
I liked Red Planet, though, quite a bit, and that's very similar to this movie.
They're finally having it out. I like the lead up to this thing, too, the close-ups on their eyes.
Yeah.
Flickering back and forth.
A little bit of a Western vibe, having these guys face off. This is fun stuff. We see the showdown. You do see a clear competence in Riddick, by the way, also. He's just ready to go. And Hauser's obviously, he's off. He's having his drug withdrawals or he's too high, either one. And he's clearly just not matched for this mano-a-mano fight as opposed to chasing him with a gun around.
What's the difference between false confidence and competence, you know?
Yeah.
Awesome action movie music there, too.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking a lot about Red Planet, how those movies really connect in terms of kind of their one-by-one characters die in both movies after getting stranded on a planet. interesting filming going on with the depiction of Mars in that film. Paparazzi's Tyler Sizemore is in Red Planet. Huge flop, though. Red Planet. That movie made no money.
I don't think Mission to Mars made it any money either. Yeah.
I remember both of them, they had poor reviews too, didn't they, both of them?
Red Planet got pretty bad reviews, I recall. I think Mission to Mars, I gotta look that up, actually. I'm not sure.
I remember being okay with both of them. Yeah. I haven't seen either in probably since around that time, but I didn't mind either of them.
I have the Red Planet Blu-ray. Mission to Mars, I like parts of it. Cole Hauser just gets dominated by that. I think Red Planet has like a 12% or something. It's not, 14%.
Oh, good product placement for Southern Comfort.
Yes. Yeah. They still have it in this universe.
Mission to Mars is 25%. Wow. So, yeah, Rotten Tomatoes was not kind to either of those movies. But, Ebert liked Red Planet. I'll go to bathroom with that.
There you go.
And I like Mission to Mars a lot because the cast. I love seeing like crazy Don Cheadle and like Jerry O'Connell in a movie with Gary Sinise and Tim Robbins. Like that movie was like, it had some fun Brian De Palma long takes, even though it was like in a heavily CG world.
Yeah, their whole like they spent a lot of time in that movie with like procedural stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, the landing and the approach and yeah.
So they have Southern Comfort. We're to assume this is like a future, our galaxy, or universe future, right?
Well, we have like hyper travel or whatever, so we can go places. Well, yeah, I mean the wine guy died saying I was supposed to die in France. Like he's a cultured individual who clearly knows Earth.
Are there any Southern Comfort bottles in Chronicles of Riddick?
You've watched it more recently than I have.
There were not. There's no signs of Earth being known.
Because you're with like the Furies and on all those planets or whatever. In what I assume are outer rims.
Don't they have I think a place is called Necropolis in it?
Something like that, yeah. That sounds familiar.
It's just got the planet names and stuff are pretty uninspired in that as well.
All the good ones are taken, you know.
There's like one called like Helium or something like that.
Yeah, Helium, that's the prison planet. Yeah. Right? Yeah, I'm pretty sure of that one. This always feels like a set. Every time I see this scene, it's like somewhere in like the Universal ride tram tour. They're running around through this canyon. Could not be. I don't know. Could be somewhere. Like I noticed they filmed some of the stuff where they filmed like Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
They did shoot a lot of it on location.
It's probably because they had to like add alien creatures in the sky flying around, so they just like did a set for this or something. Because this looks like a set to me. That's why the coverage is so close on these guys.
It's probably
slow motion running, everybody. Yeah.
I would die.
Kaiju Blue.
Yeah.
They kill each other. They kill us.
Yeah, they're scavengers.
This their blood is an acid. Oh, wait.
Let's do some green acid blood. Well, how about blue? Okay, probably better.
Here's where that cutting comes in handy, too. Just got to try to keep the threat there by making the... do some kinetic edits. Followed by another trip to the elephant graveyard. And another one of Keith David's sons dying. God, it's so sad. Oh, he hasn't died yet. Okay, he'll get
there. No, not yet.
He'll get there.
I got better.
Yeah. And yeah, here we go with the example of Riddick's clearly out for himself. And, but...
he's got to protect his fan club.
Yeah. Well, because he sees the innocence in this person. Like, I think if it was anyone else, he wouldn't give a fuck. But, like, it's his little girl that's menstruating.
I like how he keeps telling everybody not to look up, and yet everybody...
Yeah, everyone stops
up.
And looks up.
Don't look up. Don't, whatever you do, don't look up.
Riddick certainly does take his time to come back, though. He really did think about it for a while.
He's like, well, he's probably like, maybe she can get it.
Yep, here we go.
He loves taking those goggles off.
Yeah. I love this, too. This is just like him taking this beast by the arms.
Intergalactic World Wrestling. You might have thought this through a little better.
Play some shanking action. Followed by some 360 spins.
Yeah.
And then I'll break its neck. He's him.
Gonna kill it dead.
I'm gonna kill it again. I'm gonna kill it a few more times.
You guys go on ahead. I'm gonna stay here and kill this some more.
I live my life a quarter kill at a time. He just put that alien in the Xander zone. I'm bringing it back, guys. The Xander zone.
I guess so.
Can't wait to revisit Triple X for that commentary.
Oh, man. Give me a call for that one.
I will.
I guess we'll have to wait till the next Triple X movie comes out then,
exactly,
huh?
Yeah, Triple X.
So we'll never, ever do that commentary.
Triple X State of the Union, the Triple X Union Address. It'll be about Ice Cube's son from Are We There Yet teaming up with Barack Obama.
No. Take it a new direction. How about Jesse Eisenberg as Triple X? Wait a minute. Yes. Hold on. Before you strap me into that parachute.
Jesse Eisenberg is Triple X.
I don't know. Maybe we should think this through a little more. Wow.
Sound like a snowboard. Shooting people with two pistols at the same time.
Excuse me. Am I supposed to kill those guys?
His hair is all in his way.
They'll offer it to Michael Cera first, but then they'll turn it down.
Well, they team up at the end of the movie. Oh, no, there's the sun. Now he's that's horrible,
not my other son!
No.
I do like Keith David here because it's really sad. It's like, God.
Oh, Shawshank. No.
So on the Jesse Eisenberg Triple X, is there going to be a bonus feature that has, like, the death of Ice Cube's Triple X where Ice Cube's not playing him, but they just have some random guy from the back
doing stuff? They get Ice Cube by mistake.
He's walking that way, and he's like, fuck the police, and then he gets shot. And
yeah. No, he gets killed by a manic pixie dream girl.
Oh, jeez.
It all plays into the Jesse Eisenberg version.
That's going to be some movie.
Somebody get me an executive on the phone. I got to pitch this.
I want my Jesse Eisenberg Triple X.
Well, what's going to be cool about the Jesse Eisenberg Michael Cera Triple X is that although they're supposed to have feelings for each other, they show very side affection. It's
you brought it back.
Who would be the villain? Jonah Hill? Or Chris Mintz-Plasse?
Yeah.
But Jonah Hill will be sitting there with his Oscar nomination behind the desk. Yes, something you will never have. Mr. Sarah.
I like this. We're Biddick, once again, is in a situation where he can just leave, and he's pretty much about to. But I also like what's coming up in this cave here, where the film, finds a way to be inventive and like, oh, we found the larvae of the aliens that are killing us that are also illuminescent. And we could use those to light our way also.
Good times. Getting a lot of rain for a desert.
Well, you know.
Well, they just happened to be there the night it rained. On the... Right. 22nd year for the eclipse.
It's just a desert. It's not dry. It's not Nevada. It's more, it's not Nevada. It's more, more New Mexico where it rains sometimes.
You know what? After this, only 29 more days of the eclipse.
Yeah. They should really just cross it off the calendar.
Yep.
Yeah, here we go.
A lot of booze already.
With the new light. I like this. It's pretty neat.
Aw, see, they weren't trying to kill us. They're cute.
Let's eat one.
Demercious.
And yeah, you kind of forget that the movie. I mean, while you had an entirely different landscape based on the fact that there's no light anymore, you're only going between two places in this whole movie. Like you're going between part of the ship and another part of the ship.
Right.
You retraced you've basically backtracked throughout the entire movie. But it does a fun job of playing around with what you're seeing on screen. So. And Riddick's ready to go. He's good.
And I'm out.
Of course. I'm fine. See you later. Have fun in the rain. Bye-bye.
Really pushing Rhonda Mitchell to the ringer on this movie, too. I think Riddick has it easier than she does.
Yeah, probably.
She's crawling through caves. She's crawling up rocks in the rain. There might be more Riddick ass shots, though. I didn't count them, but...
Considering how messed up Riddick vision is, how's he going to pilot that ship?
You know, he's...
I'm just saying.
Once he gets to space, it becomes really easy. He's like he's like the daredevil of space pirates. That's what they all called him. not for nothing, but... Given the recent news of Batfleck, I watched Daredevil's director's cut because that's how I roll. Good movie. I like it.
Yep.
It.
Solid stuff. Affleck's solid. I agree.
I've never seen the director's cut, and I've had it recommended to me by several people.
It's a solid crime movie. Superhero. I mean, it's not without its flaws. I mean, everyone's jumping around on wires like no one's business in that movie. It's like ridiculous, but I mean, it's
Features Coolio
in a good subplot.
I'm just wondering if that's the voice that Affleck's going to go for as Batman. That kind of Daredevil voice that he had.
Yeah, I never know.
That's got to be better than the Christian Bale growl. I mean,
the hockey pads.
That's a whole other discussion.
Pray to me.
Anyway, back to Riddick. I like this. He still doesn't give her the time of day. He's like, there you go. Save everybody.
Peace.
Actually, I do like this quite a bit. This scene's really neat. The way Riddick challenges her and like bringing her arc to the forefront, where he knows what she tried to do, and he's putting her into a position where she could save herself again, and really making her have to make a deep choice here. It's neat. It's a neat way to keep it very character focused, despite the fact that we've had an entire second act focused on avoiding monsters. And Riddick's just super smug about it, too. Just... But yeah, Brandon, I see what you're saying too, because you don't entirely know what Riddick is all about by the end of this movie still.
Yeah, because if she doesn't catch up to him, he might have just taken off.
Yeah. Not even might have. He was done. He was ready. He was in the cockpit. He was ready to go.
It's cool how you very rarely anymore in movies get like the morally ambiguous hero. You know what I mean? Like, you'll get somebody who'll start out as a scoundrel in the beginning but end up being a softy at the end, kind of like, you know, Han Solo or whatever.
Someone you're just, you get what they are and you're fully rooting for them either way or enjoying them. Here, you're just not sure.
Yeah.
You're on the fence with Riddick from the start to the finish.
Like, I would argue, like, Statham's been able to work that. In, like, the Crank movies. I think
in
other movies. Well,
I'd say in Crank, you're still rooting for him.
Yeah, you're rooting for, like, yeah. I mean, he's always for himself in those movies, I would say, though.
I mean, you commit to rooting for him. Here, yes. I don't commit to Riddick.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying. That's fair.
Right. Yeah. He's clearly the good guy in Crank.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, in this movie, and again, yeah, if you were to separate it from the Riddick universe and even just Vin Diesel's stardom,
you would not
necessarily know
which is where we were at with him when this movie came out.
Yes. So yeah, I agree with you completely on that. Then
I think a good example of a morally ambiguous hero just recently was in a video game, Last of Us. Not to spoil the ending, but Joel at the end of it, I mean,
he's making some decisions there that you question
a little bit. Exactly. You know, you're not really sure where he stands even at the end of the game. I mean, but it's rare that anymore that's your protagonist. You know, even in this, I mean, like you say, you know, Radha Mitchell is ostensibly the hero, you know. So I mean, it's hard to pull it off too. I mean, the actor has to have a certain amount of charm to get over that villain aspect, you know, that the audience, you know, would root against. Oh, I know a great example. I just thought of Walter White.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I
can't believe I didn't think of him first. Yeah, that's
taken to an extreme, that's for sure.
But yeah, I mean, talk about morally ambiguous. You know, gone from, you know, high school science teacher to Scarface. And just like Riddick, you're still not sure where he stands totally.
Looper addresses those questions too in interesting ways, I would say.
Yeah. I would say Bruce Willis's character is very much his iteration of the.
Because there's a lot of double-edged swords in that movie.
But is that because does it help somewhat that you're rooting for him in a part of the movie because he's Bruce Willis? Because for a while there, you're going with the character. But...
I think, I mean, that's the kind of thing that makes Looper such a great movie to me.
Oh, yeah. Very great.
Let's focus on this action right here.
All right.
Again, this 3D thing. Where
it's not alien mouth.
Yeah.
But not shot to be in 3D.
Yeah, but it just looks like it's, like, I could see this in 3D. But I love that Riddick stare down, though, just the way he makes that scene work. And then shit happens right here.
It's the only time where Riddick kind of doesn't look... He looks confident, but not incredibly confident.
Not in control, right?
Well, then he pulls out that knife, and you see, well, he's going to have to deal with the situation. But yeah, when that second one arrives, that's like the first time you see him as vulnerable in this movie. And then I guess the second time follows shortly after, because you're going to see Radha Mitchell come up in here.
He's dead. No, wait. He's alive. No? Yes.
It's funny how the alt... I thought they shot it that way, too. Didn't they, like, shoot the version where Riddick dies and she doesn't?
They did. Originally, it said so in the IMDb trivia.
I know, that's how it's supposed to be, but did they shoot it that way?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, like, reshoot it? Because they... It's not in, like, the deleted scenes at all or anything. So.
Oh, no.
It might have been in the shooting script, and then during production they changed their mind.
Watching like the dailies and
yeah,
fair. Well, Riddick obviously got one of them, that's for sure.
And oh,
what's going on?
See, he just like look at him. He just kind of well, see ya.
I think he just knows though, like it, because well, one thing is in slow motion, and it's obviously it's hooked into her, like. He does great. He grabbed after her, though. He grabbed her arm.
Yeah, it took me by big time surprise.
I remember seeing it the first time. I thought maybe he had stabbed her.
Yeah.
You know, accidentally or something.
Cold-blooded with that a bit.
Yeah, exactly. But then...
You're not coming for the ride.
It is a pretty dark ending.
Yeah. And I survived because I am Keith David.
Following the loss of three sons, Keith David would then go on to hold ass-to-ass parties. Just months later, I think.
This movie I saw once, and I don't think I ever want to see again.
No, it wouldn't be as effective.
Yeah, and it's like Dancer in the Dark. You know, I'm glad I saw it, but I don't think I'd watch it. Watch it again.
That's a good key example, but yes, I agree. I'm not lining up to see Requiem and Dancer in the Dark and a number of other movies again and again. I'll watch Black Swan a lot, though. I'll watch that.
Black Swan's great.
Watch The Fountain a lot. I'll watch other Aronofsky. I mean, I'll watch other movies that are good. And I love Trainspotting. Like, I can watch that all the time.
Yeah.
There's a different tone going on there that opposed to Requiem, though. But...
Oh, definitely.
Without saying goodnight. Welcome to the Xander Zone.
I mean, oh, no, I got the Xander Zone. The rule of threes, Aaron. The rule of threes.
There's no rule of three in the Xander Zone, Jim.
Oh, no, he did it again. I was flying into the Xander Zone.
Yeah. That shot just said it kind of looked like the Winnebago over Spaceballs.
Yes, I was just going to say that. Yeah. Need some 80s metal to be playing as it went by. Oh, yeah, isn't it? Cole Hauser's a merc, right? That's what they call the bounty hunters.
Yeah, mercenary, yeah, merc.
Right? Yeah.
Did you like... Well, I know, Brandon, you've seen it, but I'll ask Jim first. Jim, did you see Dark Fury? Is that what it's called? The anime?
Yes.
The anime? No, I haven't.
Okay, so Brandon, did you like Dark Fury?
It's okay. It's, at 30 minutes length, it's much better than Chronicles of Riddick. it reminded me a lot of Aeon Flux and,
Yeah, it was Peter Chung, I think, who did the animation. Yes.
Yeah. That, and it reminded me, it felt like the Animatrix, which I'm sure that's where they got the idea, because that was, like, the hot thing to do with the tie-in.
Peter Chung also did a segment for the Animatrix.
Yeah. Do you know which one?
The Runner.
It was the Runner one, right?
The one about the Runner, yeah. I can't remember the title. It was about
like
the Runner.
World record, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. The second renaissance of the Animatrix, I thought, was better than either of the second two Matrix movies, but
I like the Animatrix as a whole better for some reason.
Yeah,
that's an entire other debate, but I'm not going to get into that.
It is
because I love Reloaded, and but yeah, Dark Fury that was an interesting idea. I like that they's like, hey, we can have a bridge connector, I guess, and they brought back the entire cat, like the same, or at least they brought back Keith David and
then they brought the guy from Chronicles of Riddick, the Merc character in that was introduced.
Yes, correct. And they had the girl guy that's in this movie in that one, but they didn't have her in Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah, you want to come voice this, but we're totally recasting you for the...
Yeah. That's Pitch Black. It's holds up. I like it.
Yep. I like it. I keep liking it more every time I watch it.
It's a solid little... sci-fi movie. good original characters. I mean, it obviously calls to other sci-fi, but I mean, it works its own thing. It set up a universe, so I mean, it could jump.
Like one of the main strengths of this, like we're saying, is that it didn't extend its reach very far, and then, you know, the sequel, that's all it did.
It reached too far.
Way too far. Yeah.
Jumping off this, yeah.
So hopefully Riddick will be a nice kind of back to basics version, but hopefully not too much of a too much reliant on doing what made Pitch Black work and trying to be its own thing. But who could say no to a film that has Bokeem Woodbine in it? I mean, that's like right there. I'm in. So.
And Katie Sackhoff.
Katie Sackhoff.
And Dave Bautista. and the return of Carl Urban, of course. I mean, I can only.
Wow.
No Judi Dench this time around, though, unfortunately. So that's a little sad. But she couldn't be bothered to be in Riddick. Just take time to consider, by the way, that Judi Dench was in a Vin Diesel action sci-fi movie. That's just something that amused
me. Yeah.
No extent. I hope she's in the next XXX, though.
In the same, Judi Dench is XXX.
XXX. I'm going to take you to the Santa Zone. That's my horrible Judi Dench.
I want this to be true. All right, so I think we can.
I'm gonna have to watch XXX just to learn about the Xander Zone.
I think we can wrap it up with this commentary here. That's gonna do it for this bonus commentary episode about Now, Theron, and Abe. You can of course find all my work at my personal blog, thecodeazeet.com. You can find all my movie reviews as well as at widesplit.com for my reviews there. Twitter.com/AaronsPS3. You can follow me there. Brandon.
You can find my work at my blog, Naptown Nerd, naptownnerd.blogspot.com, which I'm currently doing a Riddick retrospective. So if you want to hear more of my read more of my thoughts on Pitch Black, Chronicles of Riddick, and Dark Fury, go there. Whysoblue.com. I do Blu-ray reviews there, and check it out. I got a lot of cool stuff if you're a horror fan for September.
Indeed. Jim?
Awesome. Majority of my stuff can be found at hhwlod.com, including my somewhat biweekly blog, The Uniquely Geekly Reader. You can check out The Long Box of Doom, the Walking Dead TV podcast there, the Really Big Show or the Really BS Show. I'm also on the Nothing's On podcast on the Taylor Network of Podcasts.com, weekly television and movie review show. Check that out as well.
Awesome. You can, of course, find out the other episodes about Now, Theron, and Abe on iTunes. Check us out at hhwlod.com, which is, of course, what Jim just mentioned. Outnow.podomatic.com. You can find most of the newest episodes there and some exclusives. Outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to email us your thoughts on Pitch Black or the Riddick character in general. Facebook.com/outnowpodcast. Twitter.com/outnow_podcast. And the Tumblr page as well for Outnow Podcast there. All of that. You can follow and like those pages. We love interacting with our listeners. And that's going to do it for this bonus commentary episode. Of course, we need our secret phrase because I'll send you something in the mail if you email us the secret phrase in the commentary. So I'll just say Cole Hauser's Tear Ducts. There you go. Email us that phrase and I'll send. I could probably send you Pitch Black on DVD, actually, since I have that. So there you go. And thanks for anyone that stuck around throughout this entire commentary. Bonus points if you actually watch the movie while listening to this commentary, because I always think that's kind of fun. And until next time, so long and bye.
Hold on to what really matters. That will face it. Soft light explodes into a new dimension. Black once was hanging by thread, a needle that held you constant. It's not alright for me, but you'll be my secret. Came and gone. Now we're a splinter. So sorry.